From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Authors on Fire podcast, part of Speak Up Talk Radio's many services, home to the International Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and our newest book song, where we create a musical masterpiece to highlight your book. I am Pat Rulo, and today we have a lot to learn about rudeness. Yes, that's right. Our guest is a recent Firebird Book Award winner, John M. O'Brien, PhD. He is a licensed psychologist, professional speaker, and executive coach in Portland, Maine. He is a founder of Mental Health Associates of Maine and Activate Success. John serves as an adjunct professor at the University of Maine at Augusta, teaching courses in psychology, trauma, and addiction-related topics. He equips people with tangible skills and concrete tools that can empower them to swiftly reduce stress levels and enhance wellness. And we can all use that. His Firebird winning book is titled Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and Your Home Space. And who doesn't need to know about this? We have so much to talk about. Welcome to the network, John.
Oh, thank you so much, Patricia. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. And congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Oh, thank you very much. I was really deeply honored to have the book recognized in that way.
I love that. You won the grand prize. Have you had a chance to talk with Dr. Audrey Tang yet? Did you do that interview yet?
I haven't done that. That's going to be them. I think May 23rd is when we were booked. She's a very busy person.
She is, but it's well worth the wait. She does an awesome job. She's been a good support and friend for a long time. All right. Before we start, I read that you have a gifted cat. Do tell. Yeah.
So our cat is named Shadi, which that name is actually Farsi, and it means joy, which Shadi is mostly a source of joy, except when he wants to be fed at 5:15 in the morning. he's a pleasure. He's really, I grew up with pets and I've always loved having pets, and they just add such a nice element and energy to the house. But he actually is in charge. My partner and I are really just the ones that are his staff. That's the old saying, dogs have owners, cats have staff.
Well, in that case, I am the staff to 13 cats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They all found me. I did not see them. They showed up on my deck. This mother just kept having babies before I was able to catch her and get her spayed. But yeah, I figured if they're showing up here, there's a reason.
Right. Absolutely.
I can't imagine a moment without them. So yes, they are gifted no matter what.
Indeed. Right.
All right. Well, I was thinking about rudeness in preparation for our conversation, and I wondered, what exactly is rudeness, and is it really and perhaps only about someone else's perspective, or are there things that qualify as rude?
Well, so there's a lot that you've described in that question. I'll start out with talking about kind of what rude behavior is, that it's kind of inconsiderate, insensitive behavior that or uncivil behavior that causes stress in the person who's the target of the behavior. A lot of times in people witnessing ruder or uncivil behavior, they are impacted by it, and even ultimately boomeranging around to the person who her or himself is being rude. Kind of deciding, okay, what is rude behavior? That's a little bit trickier, because there are some things most of us would agree on where saying something nasty to someone, calling them names, et cetera, or demeaning them is rude. Where it gets a little bit trickier is when we start talking about differences in culture, for example, and just even in the United States, differences in regional culture and what, some areas of the United States are very direct. And it's expected that people are going to be direct, and that's not considered rude. Whereas other parts of the United States, being so direct is considered rude. Then you also add in ethnic background and culture from that perspective. And some cultures are very direct and emotional in their communication, and that's just kind of how they communicate. Whereas other people consider that type of communication to be off-putting or rude. So it is, it's a mixture of, there are some things I think we can mostly all agree upon, but then there are these other things where it gets trickier based on who's the sender and who's the recipient of the message.
Exactly. I know some people are extremely sensitive, so no matter how you phrase something, they take it the wrong way and that feel that you're being rude. And then you combine that with a person who delivers actually in a direct manner, and you've got a sensitive person on the other end. You've got a recipe for true misunderstanding.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It isn't insurmountable if both people are willing to have conversations about things, right? Sure. But it's just, that's sometimes hard. You know, is there a willingness in both parts?
Absolutely. So why did you decide to write a book focused on rudeness specifically?
Well, I had early in my career, in my training and my master's program, developed this understanding that, you know, we all have stress-related negative behaviors. And in part, I had to recognize that I myself had stress-related negative behaviors that sometimes got in the way. And that propelled me to go on to get my PhD and to, you know, then enter a career, you know, doing therapy with people, as I have and continue to do for almost 30 years now, in helping them change the way they manage emotions and then also the way they communicate in relationships to help people communicate in a healthier way. But it was in 2017 that I heard Dr. Christine Porath speak about the topic of rudeness and incivility and the impact it was having in workplaces, as well as in, you know, people in their home life and the stress it was creating. And it was like a light bulb went off. And so I was, you know, sort of thinking about the overlap between the work I'd done with helping people with coping and then her work highlighting the impact of rudeness and incivility. And then we entered the pandemic. And at a time when I thought our country would come together, we just became more divided. And I saw how people, frontline workers, most especially healthcare workers, were being treated. And it just was really alarming. People lost this sense of community. And then as that pandemic has continued to wane, I sort of thought that, well, surely now we will be able to, you know, return to coming together as a society. And that hasn't happened. And in fact, now we have the pandemic of rudeness and incivility. Mm-hmm. So that's what really propelled me to write the book, was to get the message out there and to let people know that we actually have a choice about how we treat each other.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about that post-pandemic, the second wave pandemic, and not just rudeness, but in so many ways, once you, as a society, or maybe even as individual people, when you drop to a lower level of civility or decency or kindness, once a group drops there, it's almost hard to pull them back up. It's almost like it got comfortable, like, wow, I didn't know I could be that way, or I didn't know we were going to be allowed to say that or do that. And I think it's a lot harder to pull up from that than it is even to drop down into it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's much, quote, easier, yeah, just to have standards or guidelines of behavior kind of loosen up or fall apart. Or let's face it, sometimes getting into treating other people rude, especially if people feel disempowered in their lives, it can feel very empowering to kind of put other people down, put people in their place. And I think social media has also fed that, that idea. So, I mean, I think it's, but that's part of the start. The first part of my book is illustrating to people, you know, when I was talking with the editor about writing it, we were saying, you know, to say to people, treat other people better because, gosh, it's the right thing to do, is not going to be enough. But when you say to people, treating others poorly and getting into more conflicts has impact on the quantity and quality of your life, that it could shorten your lifespan.
Right.
If you live more in that, that is, I think, something that gets people's attention. And so motivating people about why it's important to try to return to a more civil society, because it's better for our health, sometimes that's a better motivator.
Sure. I think anytime a person realizes, oh, this is good for me, or it'll make me happier or better or well, it's like, that's more of an impetus to begin to head on that path. The yes. word rehab, I thought that was a very smart word to put in the title. Well, the whole thing, you're taking a topic that many people might not want to even think about, but you add the word rudeness and rehab, it catches your eyes. Like, all right, what is this about? That was genius. Let's talk about why you chose the word rehab.
Well, I was trying to find something, quite frankly, that would be eye-catching in terms of the title. But I think, you know, I've worked for almost 30 years now in helping people in recovery from addiction and helping them, you know, go through the process of rehabilitation. And so when in thinking then about this topic of rudeness, I wanted to sort of send that same message that recovery is possible. And that and just like with a recovery from addiction, that people do sometimes relapse into old behaviors, and that's sometimes a part of the recovery process. And that's, of course, we don't want that, but that often happens. And to kind of normalize that, and that when those slips happen, you can learn from what led mm-hmm. to that. And that same model I felt applied to this sense of rudeness, and is that, you know, it's not about that we're going to get to the place where we're all perfect, or that you can think, oh, I'm never going to be rude or inconsiderate to others. But you can bring more attention to your behavior and figure out how you can change. And that it's not about being perfect, but it's about working at it every day.
Mm-hmm. Now, you use the word incivility. Let's talk about that word. It's a word most people don't include in their vocabulary, I wouldn't think.
Yes. Well, so when I was first sort of mulling over this book and the book title, I didn't actually have the word rudeness in there. I had the word incivility. And I was talking to publishers and potential publishers about the book, and they were saying, yeah, it won't sell, or that's not going to go anywhere because people don't know what incivility is.
Right.
So they're very much, I think, interrelated, rudeness and incivility. I mean, interestingly enough, when you go into Amazon and you search on the word incivility, it auto-corrects to invisibility.
Oh, there you go.
Which I thought is so ironic. Yes. Because it's really sort of making the point that I try to make, which is people don't understand what incivility is, and the impact of it is quite invisible. So, but I think that you know, that word sort of matches with what Dr. Christine Porath has been writing about, and I just thought I want to expand people's understanding, you know, of that concept, because I think it's, you know, it's, again, it's just, and the root of that, you know, civil is really about, you know, being a good citizen,
mm-hmm.
and so it sort of then bleeds over into what the book is not primarily about, but is sort of somewhat about, which is about recognizing how we're treating each other as a society and at a time of such division around politics.
Yes.
And that people have become so hostile to each other that we've lost the capacity to think about how, like, we're all in this together and how to navigate things as a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly the stress of it all, being uncertain, not knowing what's going to happen, and then people get angry for whatever reasons, and you combine stress and anger, and obviously you lash out, and that leads to rudeness.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. That there are, as I was saying earlier, there are many stress-related negative behaviors that people can have, and rudeness and incivility are often among them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about something interesting in your book that I guess I didn't think about. When you think about being rude, you think about somebody doing something to somebody else. You know, you're putting it off to another person. But you talk about being rude to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. That I think there's many people go around with a lot of self-judgment. I think most all of us have an internal critic. Not everybody, but mm-hmm. I would say most people do have an internal critic, and that internal critic or that internal dialogue that people have sometimes can be, people use rather uncivil language or expressions or dialogue in their mind as a way to motivate themselves,
mm-hmm.
And thinking that that's the only way to motivate themselves and get the best out of them. And I try to make the point that in the book that, in fact, that doesn't get the best out of you and often keeps you from being able to give your best. And if people are treating themselves in that way, then it's unfortunately a natural consequence that they will then treat others that same.
Mm-hmm. And that circles back and includes then a person's mental health. If you're being rude or judgmental to yourself, obviously that affects your mental health. And you mentioned it earlier. Maybe elaborate a bit on how incivility and rudeness can impact our mental health, both individually and collectively.
Okay. Well, I think certainly from the individual perspective, when people are so harsh in the way that they treat themselves, that contributes to higher levels of stress and anxiety for themselves. Oftentimes, a lot of negative judgment about self is a hallmark of depressive thinking. So whether or not someone is clearly diagnosable with, I mean, we've got to talk about, when we talk about mental health issues, we can also talk about a continuum where someone may be able to be diagnosed with a depressive or anxiety disorder. But just because someone isn't necessarily diagnosable with that, there's also this continuum where people can have more depressive thinking and more depressive moods that don't rise to the level of diagnosis, but still impact them. So mm-hmm. I think that a lot of incivility and stress can, yes, impact people in terms of their own moods. And then when we talk about that as a society, I think when people are treating each other poorly, it can be kind of infectious. And that negativity then that people are putting out there affects other people, creates stress in other people. And then you kick that up to this sort of societal level of how if people are unhappy in themselves and they see, other people on social media saying nasty things, well, that they feel like they have to add their part as well. And it just then becomes this spiral of stress. And what I say to clients is going into social media and posting a lot of nasty things, politically or about other things, you may think that you're actually releasing your stress, but what in fact you're doing instead is you're rehearsing the stress. You're not actually getting beyond it. And that's something people fail to realize.
That is huge, what you just said. They're not releasing their stress. They are rehearsing their stress. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's the nugget of today's conversation so far. I mean, that's really something to pause and think about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember hearing about that years ago in terms of research on anger. Mm-hmm. And, back many years ago, people, if they would go to a clinician, they were encouraged to punch a pillow or go out and do scream therapy or that this was getting their anger out, but that then research actually then demonstrated that it wasn't actually doing that, that it was actually by doing those things, you were rehearsing your anger and you had to find other strategies to actually be able to release it instead. And those are more, relaxation strategies, exercise, dialogue, other things that can actually help you release it in healthier ways.
And you mentioned tools like that, like breathing, active listening, compassion. How can those who are listening and thinking about how they might want to improve their incivility habits, how can one begin to implement these techniques in our daily lives to combat rudeness?
Well, certainly people are shameless self-promotion here. You're welcome to buy the book learn some of those. But I mean, I think it really begins with self-awareness and figuring out, what are the areas of my life where I'm exhibiting stress-related negative behaviors that are they causing problems for me? Are they causing problems in my relationships? What are the patterns or the habits that I've gotten into? And that isn't easy to be able to first sort of take a hard and honest look at yourself. Now, I was giving a talk yesterday to a group, a large group, and asked, how many people are frustrated by our current, situation and, hopeless or, fearful. And then I said, and how many of you feel like you're part of the problem? And nobody wanted to put their hand up. But the reality is we all are, so being, having the courage to just think about it, it's not like, there's something really wrong with you for having stress-related negative behaviors or engaging in incivility, but being honest and looking at that. And I advise people, start with self-awareness, think about where are the places in your life that these types of behaviors are coming up, and then, pick one skill, pick one thing that you try to practice, like, you know, like breathing, that's easy to implement, and then try to just start by practicing that. And when you're, you know, dealing with episodes of rudeness or incivility, or have the urge to be rude yourself, just start with one and then slowly build your repertoire over time.
Yes. Now, you mentioned that you speak to large groups, you speak to groups of people. Talk about that, because you just said one of the best ways to begin is to get a copy of your book so that you can really understand. But to also make societal changes, you work on discussions with groups and businesses. Tell us about that and how perhaps our listeners might tap into you and your services.
Okay. Well, I have been teaching, as you mentioned earlier, for the University of Maine at Augusta for over 25 years. So I've really enjoyed the opportunity to be, you know, an instructor there. I've also done, you know, had the pleasure of doing trainings for clinicians, but that's been a very sort of niche audience. And so I feel like I've, you know, with this book, I'm really trying to take my show on the road to a larger audience of more the general population. And I've spoken to professional associations in healthcare, in the legal field, in financial services. Sometimes businesses will bring me in. Sometimes, you know, I've talked to insurance groups. That yesterday's group was actually at a retirement community that my uncle is in. It's got 1,800 people in the retirement community. And so they actually wanted me to come in because I think just like any large community, there are some issues in the community. And so we had an hour and a half. I presented them. We had an hour, you know, another time for discussion. And they've actually got this recorded. They're going to keep it on demand, they said, so that people can view it again to remind themselves about some of the things that that can be done. So yeah, I do presentations in person. I do them virtually. I think that both can be effective mediums.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. You should be very much in demand.
Well, I don't know. We'll hope.
Exactly. Are you finding, as you're getting out there speaking, are you finding that these behaviors are being overlooked, or are they starting to be talked about more?
Well, I think I would give you a real psychologist answer here, which is it depends. I do think overall, I would say that they are being identified more. Mm-hmm. Of course, it depends upon the organization. There are some organizations that have significant individual contributors that the organization feels like this person's such a great producer that they get a pass on bad behavior. So I think that that still is going on. But on the other hand, I think that there are organizations that are not tolerating that type of behavior anymore. I talked yesterday about some recent research that shows that patients whose surgeons have a history of incivility with their teams tend to have more complications at post-surgery. They have there is a greater likelihood of medical errors, and there's actually a higher risk of mortality for their patients. And so now that there's so much attention in healthcare to quality measures and good outcomes, healthcare organizations cannot afford anymore to have people who are exhibiting bad behavior and, quote, getting away with it. Mm-hmm. And so there really is, I think, a tide that's turning. In this case, it's more financially driven. But I think so. I think when businesses, when people see that the bottom line is being impacted by these negative behaviors, that really is serving as a motivator. So I do see a good amount of motivation to change, but we're still a work in progress.
You hit my wheelhouse when you talked about healthcare. As a patient advocate, I've written books on patient advocacy and have taught and done training with hospitals and healthcare organizations. And you're right. And sadly, so much of this is tied to the financial outcome, is that they get the patient satisfaction survey and then they get perks and bonuses and incentives. Why we need to incentivize a healthcare organization to, just be human and not be rude. And I have seen that myself when I was working with taking care of my mom for 9 years, how the different head honchos would come in, you know, the head doctors, the head surgeons, and you could see how they treated their staff. You could see how they treated my mom and myself. And eventually I would kind of trickle down and talk to staff members, and they would be afraid. They were afraid of this person. They were afraid to speak up. So it's obvious that medical mishaps are going to occur as a result of that, if you're afraid to speak up. So there's so much involved in what you do. And hopefully the healthcare organizations will take it to heart and run with this. It's so much needed.
It absolutely is. And I do think there is more of an understanding of that. And there are so many good providers too, who are not just good technically, but also have great bedside manners. And I think it's to reward that behavior and reinforce that behavior. That's going to, you know, sometimes rewarding good behavior goes a lot further than the punishing of the quote negative or difficult behavior.
Oh, absolutely. But this is a real tricky situation, especially in healthcare, because the outcome is not just a dollar or two in somebody else's pocket. It's somebody's life that is at stake.
Yes. And I do think one thing I would say is that I do think, I mean, I've had, you know, some wonderful, I care for my mom, who's almost 89, and we've had some great experiences with her healthcare and some horrible experiences. And when a really horrible experience happens, I write a letter to the CEO of the hospital outlining what happened. And I don't always get, I mean, but sometimes I do get a return letter and that's, we're going to implement this policy. And so, you know, that your voice matters. So if you have a negative experience, don't think, well, that's just, I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. At least contact the patient advocate and write a letter or file a complaint.
Yep. One time I went so far as to stand up and ask the doctor, why are you being rude to us?
Oh,
I did, because it was over the top. And he stopped and looked at me. He said, you think I'm being rude? I'm like, well, I don't know what else you would call it. Yeah. And that kind of brought him back down to earth to have somebody call him out, not in a nasty way. I mean, I was just asked like a dumb kid, like, why are you being so rude to us?
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Or I've had interactions, whether with healthcare providers or other service, service people who are being rude. And I'll say, you know, this interaction isn't feeling good. Could we restart this? And sometimes that sort of brings people attention, like, what do you mean? And many times, just as you said, you bring it to the attention and it helps shift the dynamic.
Exactly. It's all about speaking up, but nicely, but in a polite, not in
but
a rude way.
Correct.
Don't be rude. Right. Oh my gosh. So I'm sure you have received a lot of positive feedback from folks either who have read your book or have been in your classes. And do you have any story of how maybe your book has made a difference in someone's life?
Well, let's see. Many people have told me that reading the book was helpful in terms of understanding the negative impact that all of this noise that's going on in our society is having. Mm-hmm. That understanding that, you know, it's the whole idea of it's not just we should treat each other better because it's the right thing to do, but that understanding what living in all the stress is doing to us. So I've had a lot of people come up to me and say that was a very valuable insight. I think also what you can do about it. And I think at the end of every chapter, the way I wrote the book was also with the idea, something like civility for dummies, you will, because at the end of every chapter, I have a summary of box of like, these are the least you need to know, like five things, the main highlights of the chapter. And so what I see this as, and people I think have said they liked this, is it's also a desktop reference that you can keep so that it's a reminder about things, either that you can read the book and then keep those pages marked for the things, the skills that you found most useful, or, you know, sometimes we don't have a chance to read an entire book and it's meant to be a desktop reference where people can flip through and sort of quickly read and then implement some things, you know, when they are dealing with something in their office or in their home life that's difficult.
A book for every office, right?
Well, we hope.
Yes.
Right.
So as we begin to wrap up, anything we missed that you wanted to highlight today?
I guess that I would just highlight, you know, the idea that we can't control how other people treat us.
Right.
But we we can control how we respond. And so, the way that we can, quote, control how other people treat us is sometimes how we act towards them, like you did with that physician. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we have to vote with our feet and just, you know, decide we're not going to interact with someone if they are being so rude to us. That we also have choices about what we tolerate in relationships. But I guess, you know, I hope people, by reading this book or by listening to this podcast, will feel empowered, that it's okay to take a look at yourself and your behavior and see yourself as a work in progress, that you can be different.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. It all comes around to speaking up and feeling empowered to, you know, take care of yourself.
Yes.
All right. If you would share any and all contact information where folks can find out more and get copies of your book.
Okay, sure. Well, the book website is rudenessrehab.com. You'll see that there's a link on there to buy the book, which is available through Amazon in either traditional format. It's available in ebook format and recently released in an Audible book version. You can find out more about my coaching and speaking at activatesuccess.org, activatesuccess.org. And I'm available on LinkedIn. You could probably just find me quite easily on there, and also on YouTube. Yes, I've had to create my own YouTube channel. Kind of scary, but it's at Rudeness Rehab, and that's where I'm putting copies of talks that I've given and other short videos that I'm creating. So people can contact me through those sites.
Excellent. All righty. So we're speaking with John M. O'Brien, PhD from Portland, Maine, and the title of his book is Rudeness Rehab, Reclaiming Civility in the Workplace and Your Home Space. Website is activatesuccess.org and rudenessrehab.com, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Oh my gosh, this was awesome. Thank you for sharing your book. And I think you've just given us so much to think about. I know you've tickled my brain. So lots to think about today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me, Patricia. It's been an honor.